recording for the replays coming up at 6 o'clock. Ah, nothing like coming home to some digital gremlins. But the good news is today, my good friend Sharon Raver, the executive director of Peachtree Normal, will be flying in later this evening, so we will have guests here at Rolla J Studios. Maybe we can get her to poke her face on camera tomorrow. All right, stay tuned. The 420 Radio News is next. We're back right after this.
Show, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
420 Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups. This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today.
Fun, fun, fun.
What's happening, cool cats? This is Big Daddy, and I want you to cruise on over to the Funky Roller Rink. We'll be grooving all night long. Doors open at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, every Thursday night, right here on RadicalRuzz.com.
Funky. Delicious.
Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, February 18th, 2015. Three congressional lawmakers from California are accusing the U.S. Department of Justice of overreach in an ongoing crackdown against Harborside Health Center, widely considered to be the largest and one of the most well-respected medical marijuana dispensaries in the nation. Quote, "We believe DOJ has overstepped its bounds in the Harborside case," Representatives Dana Rohrabacher, Sam Farr, and Barbara Lee wrote in a letter last week about U.S. Attorney Melinda Haig's effort to shut down the Oakland, California-based Harborside. Continuing, quote, "We believe DOJ is not acting within the spirit or the letter of the law, nor in the best interests of the people who depend on Harborside for reliable, safe medical marijuana," end quote. The letter notes that public acceptance of medical marijuana has grown nationally, even as federal policy on the substance stagnates. To highlight this support, Rohrabacher posed with Harborside's co-founder and executive director, Steve D'Angelo, at his dispensary. Drafters of this year's proposal to legalize marijuana in Ohio said Tuesday they've added language to allow adults over 21 to get a license to grow at home. They also cut the suggested tax on retail sales from 15% to 5%. Until Tuesday, the proposed constitutional amendment from Responsible Ohio said nothing about people growing at home. Lydia Bolander, the group's spokeswoman, said, quote, We had a lot of input from experts and concerned citizens, not just here in Ohio, but nationwide, Bolander said. And the more we thought about it, staying silent on the home grow issue was only going to create more confusion, end quote. Responsible Ohio needs to collect at least 306,000 signatures to place the proposed amendment on the November ballot. The amendment would provide for 10 privately owned grow sites, three of which would be in Greater Cincinnati. But potential supporters argued that leaving out home growers could hurt the proposal. Vermont could become the first state in history to legalize recreational marijuana via state legislature with a new bill submitted Tuesday that aims to end prohibition of the plant. Senate Bill 95 would legalize the possession, use, and sale of recreational marijuana in the state for those 21 and older. Adult residents could possess up to an ounce of marijuana and grow up to 9 plants, 2 mature, 7 immature, for personal use, including any additional marijuana produced by those plants. Personal cultivation would be limited to secure indoor facilities. Non-residents could also enjoy the new laws, legally purchasing up to a quarter ounce of marijuana from a licensed retail shop. The bill also proposes an excise tax of $40 per ounce of marijuana flower, $15 per ounce of any other marijuana product, and $25 tax on each immature cannabis plant sold by a cultivator. Several veterans showed up Tuesday at the Washington State Capitol to testify in favor of Senate Bill 5379, which would add PTSD to the list of terminal or debilitating conditions that qualify patients for medical marijuana use. Senator Steve Hobbs said that adding PTSD to the list of eligible diagnoses would help veterans who continue to suffer from wartime injuries and psychological stress. Hobbs, who is a prime sponsor of the legislation, served in Kosovo and Iraq and is a member of the Army National Guard. Active duty service members and reservists are banned from using marijuana under federal rules, even if it is to treat a medical condition. Veterans who have left the service, however, are not subject to the same rules, and several veterans told lawmakers Tuesday that using cannabis won't affect federal disability benefits that they receive. A group of activists gathered in New Jersey's largest city Wednesday to announce a new coalition that will advocate for the legalization, taxation, and regulation of marijuana. A string of speakers today officially launched New Jersey United for Marijuana Reform during a press conference in Newark. The coalition, which is made up of members of the ACLU New Jersey, the NAACP State Conference of New Jersey, and Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, argued that legalizing the drug would increase revenue to the state, lighten enforcement burdens on police departments and prosecutors, and streamline usage. The group cited statistics claiming that New Jersey police officers make about 21,000 marijuana-related arrests each year and argued that the time spent processing these arrests could be focused on other, more serious crimes. Governor Christie has said that he will not support the legalization of recreational marijuana, arguing that it gives the wrong message to the state's children. This has been your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, February 18th, 2015. I'm Russ Belvel.
Radio, turning red states and blue states green. 420 Radio, tune in, turn on, get highly educated.
Tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the money.
With over a billion people in the world, chances are there's somebody out there just like you. There are software engineers, pastry chefs, artists, and people with medical conditions. And what do many of these people have in common? They use marijuana. It's expected that marijuana will be legalized in California. And when that happens, what will be the biggest concern? Safety. That's where we come in. Hi-Def Transit is a discreet shuttle service that also serves as a mobile vapor room. Members can medicate on board, while our certified drivers get you to your destination safely, so you can enjoy the ride. So hop in, make friends, and ride safe. Hi-Def Transit.
Welcome back, everyone. 13 and a half after the hour, and today we're just going to bring you some great highlights from the International Cannabis Business Conference. I'd like to turn you over to the video camera, where we're going to feature the media panel that Doug Fine was a part of.
Revolution. We can talk about it one waste of time right now, but I can show you the studies from all over Europe and Canada. It's a non-issue. So we're putting out local fires, trying to have good communication. Big picture, cannabis is returning to humanity, and that is the best news as a father that and as a journalist that I can kind of help them along with. And there's people, it's an honor to be on this panel. Seriously, everybody here has had an influence on me and my work. David Jones is the really top
guy out there. Yeah. Ricardo Bach, tell me about talking to editors at the Denver Post, which, again, I'm sure it's just their editorial board, you know, said no to Amendment 64 versus, you know, other members of the leadership over there. Tell me about how that conversation went at the beginning and how it sort of evolved in terms of the direction you've gotten over the last year.
It was a bold decision on the part of the Post editors to want to do this, but they were more serious about it than anybody, and we knew that this was coming for at least 6 or 9 months in 2013, that there was a marijuana vertical, a marijuana project, and they were they were extremely committed to it going into it, and now that we're 14 months into launch and going into second year of sales and everything else, they couldn't be more committed to it, and they're upping our resources that we have at our availability for multimedia and for freelance. And so, it's a big deal. And the point they make is that if he was, if Greg Moore, the editor of the Post, was running the Post, at the end of the alcohol prohibition, he would like to think that he would have done something similar to cover this newly legal thing that was happening in the community around us, because that's what we're supposed to be doing. So to his credit, these job positions, this freelance budget exists.
The Denver Post is the most mainstream publication to bear hug cannabis, ostensibly, with its own section. The New York Times doesn't have a section. The Chronicle doesn't have a section. The LA Times doesn't have a section. These legacy brands don't. Where has been the friction within the organization about touching this federally illegal Schedule I narcotic? Has it been, can you reimburse people for weed they have to review? Can you bring it into the office for reviews? Tell me about some of the friction there this last year.
Yeah, there's been some weirdness. There are the laws about advertising marijuana in Colorado are very specific, so our advertising department has had to walk around that.
What are they?
Specifically, I'm not quite sure because there is that separation of church and state editorial and advertising, and we really have nothing to do with it, so I've not had to look up into that. I know there was the High Times and Westward lawsuit where they were looking into that and being able to advertise more freely, but...
Yeah, that was about putting it behind the counter like porn, which was, and they lost. Yeah. You can sell cannabis ads on the front of the counter, like... cars or guns.
Yeah, and we've had, I think on Thanksgiving or Black Friday, we had the entire front of the Denver Post website and a front page print ad from a local dispensary group. So that's certainly happening, and the advertising people are embracing it. They have to if they're going to develop this kind of, or devote these kind of resources to it. But I will say, our freelancers, we don't reimburse them for the marijuana, but we make sure that we pay them enough that it's ultimately paid for. We can bring products into the newsroom, and as many times as I've asked if we can ingest it inside the newsroom, especially because we're getting ready to launch this weekly TV show called The Cannabis Show and whatnot, I keep getting pushback on that. So I'll just keep asking, and maybe one day you'll be seeing David as a guest on The Cannabis Show, and maybe we are able to light one up or vape inside the newsroom, but right now that's not looking very likely.
Ricardo, since you have one of the more mainstream publications, you must get inundated every day by people who want you to write about their strain or their vape pen or their bong bowl topper holder. It seems like there's a million and one products shipping. Can you talk to these people about what cuts through the clutter? What are big red flags? What are frequently asked questions that you're tired of answering from brands?
How many white label vape pens are there out there? That's what I'm amazed with. I'm primarily am thankful to be able to employ experts in the field because I don't smoke pot. I primarily vaporize and eat it. And so without having that experience of actual, the combustion, I've hired two amazing pot critics who handle all those decisions for us, and I put all of my trust in them, and they totally kill it. But I am tired of, the products that are like the world's first, the world's first marijuana Black Friday sale or whatever it might be, especially because in just most situations they're lying about it because a medical shop in California was doing it before the recreational shop in Colorado or whatever it might be. I think year one was full of lots of interesting slash not interesting stories. You have, you know, the first vending machine selling recreational weed in Colorado, which opened right before 420 last year outside of Vail. And you know, it's a fun news note, and it's kind of a marker in time, and then you're able to move past it and hopefully find something more substantial. And it's not like my blog is all deep think pieces, because it's certainly not, and I've enjoyed writing some of those, but I think it's equally important to focus some of these brief news notes and writes and videos that are out there that just kind of tell a fuller story of what's happening right now in the marijuana space.
I got a whole beer. It's a very easy.
That's Doug Fine. You were just listening to Ricardo Baca from The Cannabist at the Denver Post. He's the managing editor there. Doug Fine from Hempbound, and of course, our Hemp Day Hump Day. And Dave Bienenstock from Vice being interviewed by David Downs from the San Francisco Chronicle.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Liebermater, you know how to tease me when I'm having computer problems, don't you? All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to have more great videos from the International Cannabis Business Conference. Whether they're in 4-3 ratio or 16-9 ratio, we don't know. We're just happy that they're showing at all, I guess. Stay tuned. We're going to come back with Dr. Carl Hart and Dr. Stanton Peel giving you some interesting data on the drug war. Stick around.
420 Radio, the world's voice of marijuana legalization. Are you in the market for portable vaporizers now? Get online to vapes.buzz, the quick and easy link to portablevaporizersnow.com. Vapes.buzz has everything you are looking for, including vape pens, herbal vaporizers, e-juice, parts, accessories, and more. Visit vapes.buzz and use promo code 420radio to get 10% off your online purchase, or just give them a call at 866-264-2415. Vapes.buzz. Get vaping, baby! Connect with 420radio.org through social media, on Twitter at 420radio.org, and our Facebook page at 420radio.org. Follow us and like us today. You'll be glad you did. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz. Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everyone. 22 and a half after the hour. In the Drug War Data Mine today, we are going to go to two of the leading researchers on the progressive edge of marijuana and addiction research. First, we'll speak with Dr. Carl Hart. He's the neuroscientist at Columbia University and author of High Price. And then Dr. Stanton Peel will talk a little bit about addiction. Of course, Stanton Peel, well known for many of his self-help books about addiction. We return you back to the International Cannabis Business Conference.
And so the question becomes, what does this mean? Well, this isn't new, this sort of increasing level of THC in terms of the sort of average concentration. We've always known how to breed high THC containing marijuana cigarettes. We've always known that. This isn't new, nor is it undesired. In fact, we kind of want a stronger THC cigarette. Then you can take less puffs. And then you decrease some of the other sort of toxicity if you're smoking it, right? And so these kinds of things are not discussed. When we think about alcohol, we think about how you drink vodka versus a beer. You don't drink the two the same. The same applies with THC. So this becomes nothing more than a distraction when we have these sort of statements made about the average THC concentration increasing.
But the more pernicious thing that it does is that it does not, we miss the opportunity to provide education to all people. So one of the things that you can do if you think the average THC concentration is increasing and you're concerned, one of the things you can do is that you can stress dose or concentration to novice. You want novice to crawl before they run. You want them to start out with lower doses. But these are educational opportunities that we are missing. We also miss the opportunity to talk about the experience of the user. If you're tolerant to THC-related effects, this is not so much an issue for you. And we also miss the opportunity to stress the importance of developing tolerance. Oftentimes in science and medicine, we talk about tolerance like it's a bad thing. But when you go to the animal literature, tolerance is protective of neurotoxic effects of drugs. Tolerance isn't a bad thing. Tolerance is a protective thing. And we miss the opportunity to talk to the American public about this. We miss the opportunity to talk to kids about this. If we really want to keep kids safe, you want to stress the importance of developing tolerance. You also want to stress the importance of the environment in which the drugs are taken. If you're talking about novice, you would encourage people to use drugs with more experienced people, as opposed to using them alone and they don't know what they're doing. We have this sort of cultural memory, and we want to make sure that we pass on this information if we want to keep people safe. But if we want to be preachy and moralistic, sanctimonious, this is not consistent with that sort of thing. But if you want to save people, this is what you do. And finally, you want to stress route of administration, difference between edibles and smoked. You all know when you take a THC and edible, the onset of the effects are delayed compared to smoking. So that means that you don't put a gut load in your stomach when you don't feel an effect after 15 minutes. All of these sorts of things we know from experience, not only from anecdotal experience, we know this from the lab. I have personally given thousands of doses to cannabis, to research participants, courtesy of you, the American taxpayer. You fund this work. And so,
we've laid a good foundation for going into new territory. The title for my talk is Normalizing Drug Use. Stoners in Colorado are pretty considerate. I just like, that came off of a website for pot users in Colorado, and to me it says a lot. A lot of people said these things earlier on. We're in a whole new world now that marijuana is legal in several states and in more states coming up. That changes society in a major way. And I realize that some of you just want to have fun, you know, make some money, smoke some dope. But I've got a bigger mission for you, and I think the world does too, and I want to try and lay out what that mission looks like. How are we doing so far with some of the challenges that have already presented themselves along these lines? I mean, we've just legalized drugs in the state. How's that working? What steps should we be taking to solidify that to go forward? And what will the 21st century look like on drugs in that new world we're describing? I'm interested in addiction. You know, I wrote about addiction in 1975, and I know everybody in this room is thinking, how could a young guy like that have written a book back in 1975? I get that all the time. I'm interested in what addiction is, and I wrote a book called The Meaning of Addiction. And Carl and I are very close in saying addiction is not a function of drugs. And when I wrote about addiction, I was saying two things. You know, I can take drugs without getting addicted, and people get addicted to a lot of things that aren't drugs. So forget that connection. But I'm against addiction. I'm a clinician. I like books about the feeding addiction, the most recent of which is called Recover, Stop Thinking Like an Addict. And I'll tell you what I mean by that when I say stop thinking like an addict. And I treat addiction. I developed a treatment program that was used both residentially and it's now online. But what is different for me and some other people who are against addiction is I'm not against drugs. Drugs aren't the problem. That's another quote from Carl. And drug addiction is not a disease. And that's an important concept to keep in mind. And one reason it's an important concept to keep in mind is because, hey, let me ask you a question. Has anybody asked you a question yet? What's the hardest drug addiction to quit?
Sugar.
Cigarettes. Everybody said that. Has anybody in this room quit a smoking addiction? Raise your hand, please. My, my. How many of you went to a support group or to treatment and got over it due to treatment? Golly gee, let's... How many of you got over addiction? Turn around and look. Raise your hand again. Raise your hand if you've gotten over a smoking addiction, please. And how many of you went through treatment? Raise your hand. Come on, guys. Is this stunning? A large part of the people in this room have gotten over the toughest addiction, and virtually nobody used treatment. Now, I've got something so radical to tell you now, I don't have time to really go into it. A higher percentage of heroin addicts, crack addicts, and alcoholics quit their addictions without treatment than smokers. Do you believe me? Even people who love me don't believe these things, and they're true.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with our Shoutcast stream for all internet-enabled media players. Go to rad-r.us/420shout or just click the Shoutcast icon below the live radio feed at 420radio.org. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at... Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Marijuana legalization also ushers in the return of the American hemp industry. Get the latest news from the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, in our Hemp Day Hump Day update.
All right, we're going to go back to the International Cannabis Business Conference, where I got a chance to sit down with Doug Fine.
On the Doug Fine here. But our own Hemp Day Hump Day correspondent, Doug Fine. How you doing, Doug?
Hey, Russ. I could not be better. It's beautiful weather here in San Francisco. And as we were talking about off air, you you know, it's not anything that your fans will, this is not going to surprise them, but it's just a pleasure whenever we get to talk because it's always such a high-level conversation. You're such a skilled journalist, and your listeners ask such good questions, so it's something I'm so glad to be part of.
Yeah, big shout-out to the listeners out there who follow us on the live show, 3 p.m. weekdays on 420radio.org. They do get some really good chat questions in there, and the latest thing that's happening, yesterday I got to meet Edgar Winters, our hemp farmer in Oregon, who's been licensed, but he's got no seed. So let's talk a little bit about getting seed to the hemp farmers.
This is really, Russ, a bigger picture story of one of the most exciting times for me ever as far as a journalist, which is saying a lot. I mean, I've reported from Rwanda and the world's last mountain gorillas and met and visited Aung San Suu Kyi, the Burmese democracy dissident, when she was under house arrest. I've had a fun career so far, and this is by the day developing, exciting, like just sticking now. I've got so much to talk about, but just sticking to hemp in Oregon. I'm trying to help the state of Oregon get the hemp seed imported in a way that federal authorities are going to smile based on our Section 7606 of the Federal Farm Bill of 2014 that allows hemp cultivation for research purposes, including sales and marketing research, at least as some states are interpreting it. So is it going to work? Is it going to happen? Oh, I don't know. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
A second issue that's developing is the issue of cannabis for different purposes growing in the same place. So in other words, cannabis with low THC versus cannabis that has THC in the mix, psychoactive versus hemp, and I don't even like using the word versus. Right now there's a fast motion education process going on in places that do have traditional psychoactive cannabis cultivation so that they feel comfortable and relaxed about the introduction of industrial hemp. And it's really fun to watch because not only are livelihoods at stake, but it's showing that we who have made the argument that bringing this plant above ground is going to be a positive step for humanity and for the way that we interact on a larger scale, far beyond the plant, and for many people that involves lessons learned from the plant in various ways, right? We must be able to communicate in a civilized way with one another and understand that there's no problems, only solutions, as John Lennon said. So emotions can run high, but this is all resolvable, really. And here's my personal message for folks who might be living in that demographic. Too High to Fail is, and I'm sorry, I'm rambling so long.
No, go.
Too High to Fail is about the culture of the Emerald Triangle, lovingly referred to as the redneck hippie of Mendocino County in particular, is a real culture that needs to brand itself in terms of post-prohibition survival as the way Parmesan cheese must come from that region and champagne must come from that
region.
There
you go.
And Southern Oregon is part of that Emerald Triangle. It's the northern part. Southern Oregon is the northern part of it, and Mendocino is the southern part of it. And so it's the same culture, and so I want the psychoactive cannabis farmers that grow outdoors under God's sun and all the way that I advocate and recommend and talk about all the world to understand. These are my peeps. I care a lot about them, and they've provided important medicine over the years. And so I wouldn't do anything that I thought was a threat. And I'm involved with Edgar Winters Hemp Farm, and there's no guarantees in this life, but we have the science and the good intent and the communication skills that we hope allay people's fears. And I hope we're talking in a year from now, and I'm saying, see, it was no problem, versus, oh, I'm so sorry, forgive me, but really, it's all about communication, and I think we can make it work.
Yeah, just to catch some listeners up, if you don't know what the controversy is we're talking about, the real basics here is that you have psychoactive cannabis and you have industrial cannabis, and the fear is that one is going to cross-pollinate the other and either make bad hemp or lousy pot. And the people I've interviewed on this who have studied this kind of stuff tend to say that there's a three-mile zone. If you can get the farms 3 miles apart from each other, that's really not anything we should worry about. Is that some of the education that you're trying to get across to people?
Yeah, that's one part of it, and that's, of course, on open ground and, you know, flat fields in Belgium. When you're talking about a hilly country, it can be much less than that and safe. There's also a relatively small window of when pollen is happening from the hemp plant of roughly 72 hours. This is all relatively new knowledge for me that I'm in the process of. I'm a student every day of this. It's fantastic, sure, as a journalist, right? But I've seen studies, 1997 study out of Hungary on this this kind of stuff. So 5 miles is the longest I've heard. It's a European study talking about 7 kilometers, so I'm saying five miles. But they also, psychoactive and industrial, tend to pollinate at different times. It's a different growing length of growing season. So it's really, again, it's about communication. I don't, so in the end, I don't think this is something that we're going to be worrying about it and talking about in the long term, but I'm glad it's truly an educational opportunity. You know, it's a moment to embrace, you know, here's another thing. The long term philosophy of this, beyond today's petty and nonsensical nuances around TH points of a percent of THC and things like that, is that not only did, in my view, I'll say the word God, whatever your view is, nature, whatever gave us the plant, and it's been useful, and humans have used it for so long that, of course, we've bred it. It's just Darwin. We've just bred it to things that we want it to do, and there's absolutely no reason that a single strain / cultivar of this plant that defies a definition of cannabis versus hemp. It might have incredible seed producing if you want to render it for oil. It might have strong fiber, and it might have 8 or 9% THC. You see what I'm saying? There are cultivars that might be good for everything, and we can just stop arguing about it. But yeah, farmers are going to always have to be careful that their plants don't pollinate your neighbor's plants. That's called good neighboring and good farming.
And I would think, I mean, this phenomenon must exist for other crops.
Exactly.
So we don't have to reinvent the wheel on this, do we?
It's exactly right. But it's also part of the bigger discussion here about on the message of cannabis to how to fail. It seems like the Southern Emerald Triangle, maybe I'm just generalizing here, might have come to terms with this to a degree a little bit more than Southern Oregon has, which is legalization is here. Federal legalization is coming. It is the morally right thing. Legalization of this important plant and herb is as important as ending segregation was in the South in the 50s and 60s. Like, you have to do the right thing. And I'm talking to people here at this conference or in San Francisco who are coming up to me saying, but God, I'm a farmer, really, a guy who was upset. It's like, this legalization thing, how do we stop it? It's in my living. And I'm like, dude, if you're part of the Northern California thing, be part of the branding effort, join the Emerald Growers Association, like, because it's going to be a vintage high-end thing. The Marlboro equivalent is going to be there in the corner store. You have to be the fine wine in the fine shop. And it's easy for me to say. I relate to someone. He said, I've got a one-year-old. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it matters. But to the extent that part of the what we're calling people having a little bit of initial concern, I think it's going to all go away, about hemp coming into psychoactive growing country in the hills in the south of Oregon, is people that are afraid about legalization in general. It's not so much that they're afraid of hemp. They haven't yet wrapped their minds around the fact that it's becoming a legal industry, and you can either try and keep being a moonshiner, or you can try and become a microbrew, but it's coming, and it's time.
That's a really good way to put it. It's time to transition from being a moonshiner to a microbrewer. That's a great way to put it, because there's been a false profit that's been built upon prohibition that it increases the price of the product beyond what any farmer would get for any crop, and there is going to have to be this adjustment period. The other adjustment I see happening with respect to hemp is, it's all well and good that we plant a whole bunch of acres of hemp, but it's got to be processed. There's got to be those intermediate industries, the decortication facilities, and so on. How is that developing in Oregon and other states?
Well, I'll tell you what it's something I think about every day, and so I'll tell you what my dream situation would be. And I'm dead serious about this. I should say I'm gigglingly serious about this, but. So the main concept in Hempbound is this concept of tri-cropping, of putting processing facilities in communities so that they can have ownership of the value-added process. Hemp's profitable on the ground, as we've discussed on past Hemp to Hemp Days, but once you're doing value-added, you're adding 100 times or 1,000 times to that value and developing real education in the community, real economy in the community, and keeping the, you know, people care, the law of the commons is returned. People care about their communities and their soil and stuff, because that's where the economy is coming from. So that's the goal, right? right? So for Oregon, what I want to be is the hemp czar. I basically want, you know, some, and the problem is, unlike the psychoactive legalization, which has come under the tutelage of the Liquor Control Board, and they have funding because people pay liquor taxes, the hemp side is the Department of Agriculture, which doesn't have any money.
Yeah.
So I don't know where the pot of money would come from for a salary, but my and the main part of it is a lot of travel, is getting the seed, and I'm already doing this, but I'm not being paid. Get the seeds to the farmers in the program. Then the next thing is bring in as much knowledge as you can, and I have it from around the world and people that I know, and some knowledge I've gained myself, but from lots of people, to help farmers, everything. Like, there's a science to how you're planting, you know, and see, and that's mistakes that were made in other states early on that we can avoid here and have a great first season. We can talk a little bit more about that. But during the season, as that's going on, I want to be working hard to be getting the harvesting equipment in to the communities. And that's going to be involving importing from overseas in a lot of cases when you're talking about fiber and biomass gasification for the energy. Those are the three legs of the hemp-bound tri-cropping, is seed and flower on one hand, fiber and herd in the middle, and energy on the other side. So the three legs of tri-cropping. So I want to get these facilities in, and I don't know what the grant funding sources are out there or miracles, you know, it's a couple $1 million to get some harvesting facilities in for the entire Oregon harvest from year one. And that's something that I really want to be part of, and as hemp czar. And I've always aspired to be a hereditary monarch. So.
Well, and if you've got to be a hereditary monarch, why not choose Russian, right? They do it they got a certain panache, right? We're sitting here with Doug Fine at the International Cannabis Business Conference. You can find more about Doug at DougFine.com. He's at Organic Cowboy on Twitter. The books are Too High to Fail, Hemp Bound, and other books that don't have anything to do with marijuana.
Also, I just announced yesterday the pre-order for a new project, the Hemp Printed First Legal Harvest at DougFine.com. You'll see the link right at the top. It's a pre-order now because we're putting in hemp from last year's U.S. hemp harvest into the mix, and you can have a piece of history.
That's awesome. Doug, thank you again for everything you're doing for us and joining us on Hemp Day Hump Day and being here at the conference and sticking up for hemp. Love it.
Great to be with you, Russ. Thanks for all you do.
All right. Peace out. Here in beautiful San Francisco, California, we're sitting here with Ethan Nadelman, the executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance. Ethan, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on, Russ.
Your talk was wonderful yesterday, and I noted that one of the things, and I was very pleased to hear you say this, your greatest failure, that the Prop 40, was it
40? Prop 5.
5, that's, yeah, 47 yeah. was this year. The Prop 5 with dealing with mass incarceration, and now, just a few years later, it sounds like mass incarceration's on everyone's lips. That seems to be the buzzword these days. Must feel pretty good about this.
It does feel pretty good, because I feel that Drug Policy Alliance was leading this effort around pulling back mass incarceration, basically because we had the edge. I mean, the first people that the majority of Americans agree we don't really need behind bars are the people getting picked up for drug possession. And then they start thinking about adults who sell a little drugs to other adults, and they begin to wonder, you know, who are they hurting? So when you have 500,000 people behind bars on any one night in America for a nonviolent drug events, that was the place to pull this back. Now, seeing left-right coalitions pulling together to roll back incarceration around the country at the federal and state level, seeing money coming in from major foundations, the MacArthur Foundation, Soros giving $50 million to the ACLU to work on this, there's some real momentum. The hardest thing, of course, is the stickiness. We're still dealing with a massive prison industrial complex that does not really want to let go of what it has, the jobs and the money. And not only the jobs and the money, but a way of thinking about things. A notion that if you keep using drugs, we'll give you a couple of chances to quit. But if you can't or you won't, sorry, man, we still got to lock you up. You know, you're selling drugs, sorry, man, we got to lock you up. Changing that mindset's beginning to happen, but that's a tough one still.
You know, another paradigm shift that I've noted as of late on Bill Maher's program this last weekend, Johan Hari was on the show. And here at the event, Stanton Peel also addressed this idea of changing the concept of what addiction is. is. Stanton mentioned, you know, people are addicted to a lot of things, and a lot of things make people addicted, and it isn't always drugs. Does that surprise you that people are coming to understand this new notion of what addiction is, and how does that affect our movement forward in changing drug policy?
Well, you know, both Johann Hari in his book, as well as Stanton Peel in his very important writing over the last decades, you know, has pointed out the extent to which oftentimes in America, our understanding of drug use and addiction is driven so much by moralisms, by ideology, by the belief in sort of 12-step ideologies, in the notion that sobriety is a great good that needs to be mandated by the state. I mean, the same things almost that led us to prohibit alcohol, alone among almost all Western nations, more or less. That part of the American psyche is so hard to uproot. If you ask the question why the Europeans have been so much more successful than we have been in dealing with drugs, their rates of drug use are not that much different than ours for many countries, but they don't look at drug use and addiction through the same ideological prism. They understand that people who struggle with drug use can then stop using or reduce their using. They understand that most people who use drugs are not addicted. They understand that if you do get addicted, the role of the state should be to try to minimize the harms that a drug addict does to themselves and others, not to lock them up forever and all this stuff. And so I think that how to popularize that notion in America, I mean, it is a great challenge. And when I, at DPA, you know, about a third of our work, or a little more, focuses on ending marijuana prohibition, right? The legalization of marijuana for medical purposes, the decriminalization, reducing arrests, and ultimately legally taxing and regulating it. The second third of our work is about ending mass incarceration, and especially stopping the flow of people into jails and prisons for nonviolent drug offenses. The third part is the one that remains the most difficult, and that's about treating drug use and addiction seriously as a health issue, not a criminal issue. It's looking what Portugal has been doing, where they don't put anybody in jail for simple drug use or possession. It's looking at what other European countries are doing by allowing heroin addicts to get pharmaceutical heroin from a clinic, which has been enormously successful, but we don't talk about it here. So that basic idea that you don't need to lock people up for simple drug use or possession, and that addiction is not a fatal disease or not a disease of life, but that there are other ways to think about that, that's a broader cultural shift in understanding that needs to get some serious traction fast.
Absolutely. As we move forward with one of those thirds, marijuana legalization, I'm interested in how you might project the arc of legalization. I know when we passed medical marijuana here in California, it was pretty wide open. And then the next states had plant limits and condition lists. And then the next states had no home grow. And then it seemed to got more restrictive as it moved across the country. Do you see a similar arc with legalization? I heard you talking about the Ohio thing a second ago.
It's going to be, I think it's going to some extent different. And I think it's, the thing I don't like about where we're headed is that legalization, the shape of marijuana legalization, is going to be driven more and more by large-scale economic interests, right? Mm-hmm. It's the dilemma that I'm facing right now with Ohio, where there's likely going to be a ballot initiative this year, in 2015, mm-hmm. to legalize marijuana, right? And it's, you know, on the one hand, this initiative is going to end the criminalization of marijuana possession. It's going to try to protect patients. It's going to open up a whole huge industry for distribution and all sorts of other things. I understand there's a possibility that they may revise this initiative so it could include a home grow, in fact, even in that, which would be very important. But it's being funded by 10 business interests, each of whom are putting up the money to legalize marijuana, but in return, they're going to write into the state constitution that only those 10 business interests can produce wholesale marijuana, yeah. Basically using the casino model.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of, in the absence of these business interests getting together to do this, marijuana would remain illegal in Ohio for years to come. And I'm very grateful for these guys stepping up. But then writing into this constitution that they're going to have an oligopoly for in perpetuity,
yeah,
just kind of sticks in your craw. Now, I think when we look, when you look to what happened with medical marijuana, what happened was as we had to go in the ballot initiatives, we could more or less draft what we was thought, what we thought was right, tempered by what the polling showed us was possible. The more you get into the legislative frame, that's where the compromises happen. So in New Jersey, we led that effort. In the last minute, they banned home grow, first state to do that. Then we go in New York, and you know, moving forward, and the last moment, Cuomo pulls a fast one on us, and they ban, you know, whole plant marijuana. So I think the legislative got more and more restrictive on medical. In the case of full-scale legalization, I think what's going to happen, possibly, is that big business interests may start to fund and drive these ballot initiatives to serve their own interests, and some advocacy groups may be working hand-in-hand with them rather than trying to check how far that's going. For DPA, with certain principles that we stand for on that, the legislative process is going to be a lot more complicated, and I don't know how that's going to play out, whether the big business interests will dominate there, whether the public health side or other, you know, the same things that bounded medical marijuana will play out on full legalization, that remains to be seen.
You know, the list of states that are projected for 2015, 2016, California, Arizona, Nevada, Massachusetts, Maine, Vermont, Rhode Island, these type of states are also states that were in the vanguard of passing medical marijuana. Do you foresee a state jumping that trend and going straight to legalization by any
chance? You know, I'll tell you, my friend Travis Maurer, who was really played a pivotal role in bringing me and DPA to take a serious look at doing Oregon in 2014. Mm-hmm. I mean, he deserves a huge amount of credit for pulling us in there and getting that thing going. But his roots and his passion are Missouri.
Yeah.
And what I've told Travis is if the polling there is actually persuasive, which I find hard to believe it will be, but if it is persuasive, we'll take a look at Missouri. I'll also say, you know, there's places like, you know, Arizona was sort of late to the medical marijuana game. So if it does do it, marijuana legalization, it would be sort of jumping over a bunch of others. In New Mexico does not have an initiative process, but there are ways to put things on the ballot. And there's a hostile right-wing governor, Susana Martinez, who doesn't want anything happening. But there's a state, you know, Senate Legislative Committee that just approved legalization just a few days ago in New Mexico. So something interesting can happen there. I don't know what other state. I mean, the real surprise would be Ohio, because Ohio still doesn't have legal medical marijuana. And if they pop through in 2015, you know, it's going to be... It's going to be, I think, a net good, although I do worry about other business interests rolling with that model with a lot less sensitivity to the broader marijuana interests and, you know, individual interests and medical interests than we've seen in Ohio.
Yeah, I've heard that from my listeners in Ohio who say, I don't want the precedent to be set that legalization is up for the highest bidder. And I go, I don't know, if you're living in Kansas and some billionaire comes along and says, hey, I'll legalize for you, but I get to grow everything. How could you turn to a bunch of Kansans who are going to get criminal records and jail and tell them no?
No, exactly. If you're in Kansas, I think one might be inclined to say, okay, if you think you can knock out your money's big enough, you get to grow it all, and you knock out the prohibition on possession, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And then down the road, we can try to remove your monopoly, but at least you'll have ended the prohibition. I mean, I think to some extent, I'll be talking to the Ohio activists in coming weeks, but already the conversation is God, guys, I'm with you. I get it. But do marijuana legalization activists want to be in the position of opposing a marijuana legalization initiative that advances much of what they're fighting for, but has this unfortunate feature of creating a constitutionally mandated oligopoly on wholesale production? Tough dilemma. Yeah. But I think it's raising the kind of tough issues that it's a sign of our movement's maturity that we're being forced to grapple with these really difficult issues.
Last issue for you to deal with today. 2016 is coming forth, and we've got a presidential election. Both sides, although Hillary Clinton seems to be, some people say inevitable, the GOP side, there's a whole bunch of people involved. And I just want to get your thoughts on how you see the legalization and the reform efforts, the end of mass incarceration and all of this, affecting presidential politics moving forward.
Well, I think, first of all, I think Rand Paul's running is going to be a very good thing for this issue, because he's been good on our issue. issues, very good, one of the best in the Senate. And his comments on marijuana, while somewhat mixed, are getting better and better. I noticed when he went after Jeb Bush on Hannity's show recently, he made his best comments ever about marijuana, marijuana policy reform. So his heart's with us on this thing from a libertarian perspective. The other Republican candidates, I'm most worried about Jeb Bush, because he's showing a real animosity on this drug issue, a real willingness to be a total hypocrite as one of those guys who smoked a lot of weed, maybe even sold a little weed when he was younger, but no reservations about locking up people and punishing people for that. So I'm curious to see how bad he's going to be or whether he improves a bit. Most of the other Republican candidates don't look a hell of a lot better either. I mean, Christie, we have an office in New Jersey, and we've worked with him on issues like reducing some incarceration and trying to reduce overdose fatalities and even some harm reduction stuff. On medical marijuana, he's kind of been mostly a problem but occasionally helpful, but he's got a real anti-marijuana thing going right now. So he's a real mixed bag on this stuff. On the Democratic side, I was meeting with some folks who are advising Hillary just a few weeks ago, and my advice to them was, look, be no worse than Barack Obama and Eric Holder have been. And those guys, I give them a lot of credit. The White House has been pretty damn good since August of 2013. So it's thinking through what Hillary could do that's at least as good as what they did and maybe a step better. That's going to be the challenge, and whether or not she's open to it. I mean, so far as we know, she doesn't have much of a history with marijuana. Maybe she never did even inhale.
And
who
she's
knows?
Denied it, actually.
She's denied it. So it's quite possible. Meanwhile, we know Barack Obama was kind of marijuana friendly from a very young age, not a young, very young age, but from a reasonably young age. And so I worry about that. I think she's going to try to get out front on the issues of mass incarceration. I think the Republicans are going to be better and better on that issue, too. There's influential right-wing, right and left coalitions that are emerging on the issue of reducing, ending mass incarceration. I think most of the Democrats whose names get bandied about, I think Elizabeth Warren kind of gets it, but she says she's not going to run. I think Bernie Sanders is going to be out there, but, you know, he's one of those kind of old-line leftists, old-line socialists who's not very culturally comfortable. He kind of votes the right way because he understands it's the right thing to do, but it's never really been his thing.
My conversation with Ethan Nadelman at the International Cannabis Business Conference. You can get that entire video from my Radical Russ YouTube page. Check that out if you want to get the whole thing. Plus, all the rest of my videos, we'll be showing some of them the rest of this week. That's all the time we got for Hour 1. I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down super.
Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome. Welcome back, everyone. 4:02 in the Pacific Time Zone. Time for Toker Talk Radio. Hour 2 of the Russ Belville Show is on now, and we are live from Mobile J Studios. So glad you could be here with us. Had a great weekend in San Francisco. I got to spend Saturday in San Francisco with my wife, Iva, for a wonderful Valentine's Day. Had in-room massages, sourdough bread bowls of chowder. It's all very, very good. So that and the International Cannabis Business Conference, Sunday and Monday. And keep in mind, we got another conference coming up. March 15th and 16th is the Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference. That'll be taking place, I think it's in Ashland. I think it's in Southern Oregon. So we will be attending that conference as well. Another thing I learned from this conference is that there is a new political website, marijuanapolitics.com. You can find them at MJ Politico on Twitter, and I'm apparently going to be a big part of this. I didn't know it until I got there. I showed up at the event, and there was this big booth for marijuanapolitics.com. Nice young lady there running the booth, and they had their website up, big screen website, and there's my article, Your Brain on Marijuana is Just Fine. I'm like, that's interesting. My article's on this site. No, don't worry. There's no shenanigans going on. It's just the blog for the International Cannabis Business Conference is evolving into a new website, marijuanapolitics.com. And it looks like I'll be a big part of that. So really excited to have another platform for my writing and my show. We'll tell you more about it when I know more details. Also got contacts all over the place from people that are interested in continuing work with the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio. So if you are an advertiser out there looking to get in on the ground floor and to lock in a long-term deal while the prices are cheap, this would be the time to do it. Things are about to blow up here. I'm really, really excited. So get those advertising requests in. You can go to 420radio.org